Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. So just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's D.A. on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Coming up this hour on the show, did the Milwaukee Bucks ruin the NBA? We'll give you one of the great hypotheticals in basketball history coming up here in about 18 minutes from now. And Chiefs nose tackle, rookie, in the middle of that defensive line, Derek Nnadi is going to join us. He has really flashed quite well, started the second half of the season for the Chiefs, and their pass rush is the best part of that defense. You saw what it did when they unleashed it against the Andrew Luck-led Colts offense last week. We'll talk to Derek Nnadi about snow angels last week and playing in the Arctic Blast this week, coming up in about 30 minutes from now. So speaking of which, AFC title game coming up this weekend. Apparently, there is biofreeze going on in the weather. On Sunday, a high of 19 degrees. 19! Kickoff is going to be around 6 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Central, which at that point in time is going to be about 17. It'll dip into about 16 degrees, and that's just flat temperature, not wind chill, by the time the game is over. So here's the problem. AFC is the late game this year. The dome team is the early game, the NFC game, the Saints and the Rams. Kansas Cityans will go out to Arrowhead Stadium, and all of the game will be in the dark after the sun went down. And that's going to be brutal. I have sat in the upper deck of Arrowhead Stadium in November and December, never in January. I've never been up there in the upper deck. But it can be absolutely frigid with the wind whipping through. And it's going to be a bitter freeze. And so you look at that weather and say, it's going to have some effect on the game, right? Oh my God, it's going to be 16 degrees. Real grass, frigid temperatures, just snowed. It's not getting very, very warm over the course of this week. A little bit of rain in the forecast, but nothing over the temperatures of the 30s. So it's going to be a pretty cold week in Kansas City. By the time we get to Sunday's game, you got to imagine that turf is frigid clumps of grass. Explosive offense, especially for the Chiefs, run with a lot of motion. They utilize their speed, game breakers like Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes going deep. You need some type of decent passing conditions, frozen wind, cold temperatures, bad turf should hurt Mahomes and Tyreek Hill in that offense, right? Although you could say the same thing for Tom Brady's offense, because while it's less deep threat, it's less big play based, it is all about timing underneath. And if your guys can't get off the line of scrimmage correctly, if it's a sloppy turf, if it's hard to plant, that could certainly hurt Tom Brady and timing with his receivers. I would say X's and O's wise, I would give a slight advantage to the Patriots in this game because of the cold, because I trust the Patriots' ground attack and run game more than I do the Chiefs. While the Chiefs haven't really missed much of a step after Kareem Hunt left, Damian Williams has been very good. I still believe James White and Sony Michel and the Patriots offense has now kind of been girded over the last month or so to run the football because his passing just has not been as crisp as we've seen in recent years. Now, maybe this was because of an injury. Maybe this is because of age. But let's face it, if you watch the Patriots after that Steelers game in the final 3 weeks of the season, the Patriots went high ground attack. And I think that was to get ready for the playoffs if Brady is unable to do what Brady does. Now, on Sunday, we didn't see really any lack of Brady ability, but they were able to run the football really well, and I think that really helps them. I think the Patriots are preparing to adjust to a new Tom Brady, and that's why they drafted Sony Michel. I think they are preparing to evolve as an offense more towards a ground game to protect Brady at this point in his career, and understandably so. So because of that, sloppy turf, cold day, frigid day, a little tougher to throw, I think I would lean slightly towards the Patriots' offense in it being less affected by the cold. Except there's one other component of it that does not show up in stats, in metrics, and that is Tom Brady's old and Patrick Mahomes is not. And what happens as you get older with colder weather? You get colder easier. You need to go inside quicker. That the same hoodie that you used to wear at 20 degrees when you were in college, you cannot wear at 20 degrees when you are older because you are absolutely frozen. You know, it sounds silly, but I'm sorry. You know how it felt to go out of the cold when you were in your teenage years or in college, and you know how it feels to go out now. You got different blood. You got a different body, especially if you go out and get hit. I don't care what Tom Brady says about teaching his mind to absorb contact. Getting hit at 41 years old at sub-zero temperatures feels different than getting hit at 21 years old at sub-zero temperatures. And I don't know if anybody is going to find some type of metric about quarterbacks under the age of 25 in freezing temperatures of the playoffs, Mraz, but I can't help but think, I know how I feel. I know how most adults feel. I know how my friends feel at 40 years old versus 20 years old. I know how my dad feels. I know how my uncles and aunts feel. I know how my mom feels. I know that we all, as we get older, hate the cold more and more, especially if you're getting hit in that cold. I gotta think that while I would give a slight X's and O's advantage to the Patriots with the cold weather, from a quarterback standpoint, I'd rather be 23 in Patrick Mahomes than 41 in Tom Brady on Sunday.
Yeah, and I have two notes on that. Number one, my father, I don't think he's ever been the same health-wise, and I credit all his health problems since, you know, natural aging, since sitting out in 1996 opening day in the snow. Ever since that moment, something's always been bothering him.
Yankee Stadium in the snow, 96.
Yeah, healthy.
Since that day, Bob the Deli Man has never been the same.
Always a back problem, there's that, and it's ever complaining ever since that day. And I was from sitting out in the cold at a Yankee game. Number two.
22 years of Bob the Deli Man complaining about the 96 opening day.
Right. Well, or even just complaining about something bothering him, and it never existed before sitting out that day in the cold. That was the day that made him old.
Okay.
All right? Now, on the other hand, Brett Favre, okay? Brett Favre, 11 years ago in that NFC Championship game now, was famous for being one of the three coldest games of all time, Packers-Giants. Brett Favre in that game, at 38 years old, went 19 of 35 for 236 yards, two TDs, two interceptions. One of those touchdowns, 90-yard catch and run by Donald Driver. So without that, threw for about 140 yards in freezing weather that day and two interceptions.
The game that everybody remember. Tom Coughlin's face basically froze off.
Right. When it's that cold, you saw an old quarterback in Brett Favre who had been known for taking hits, and he could take hits, right?
And just playing like in the cold in the playoffs forever.
Forever. And he looked so ancient that day. Now, I know he ended up retiring, coming back with Minnesota, going to an NFC Championship game that forgotten year with the Jets. I understand all of that. But he didn't have to play in those elements. Minnesota was in the domes and everything like that, like New Orleans. Him playing in the elements, that was the first real sign, like, oh, yeah, Brett Favre's old, and he can't compete with a young Eli Manning. Remember, he threw that pick in overtime and only got to that point because Lawrence Tynes missed two kicks in the fourth quarter that would have ended the game beforehand. That was the only reason Favre even had a chance to still win that game.
And a hold that should have never been a hold on the
right.
touchdown.
The point,
Ahmad Bradshaw, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was an Ahmad Bradshaw touchdown. Should have been called back. The point is, everybody thinks of that game and goes, ah, Brett Favre had the Packers in overtime with a chance to win. No, Brett Favre was not good that day, and the cold clearly affected him, and nobody thought it would because he was Brett Favre. I think you're going to see a lot similar outcome with Tom Brady because you know what? You could tell yourself you're eating the avocado ice cream and drinking the crazy water and going through whatever workouts you can. The one thing that no matter what the aging process can't defend against is being cold, and Tom Brady is going to look a lot colder than Patrick Mahomes on Sunday.
So to your point, after he leaves the Packers and retires and then comes back, he has a very good start to his season for the New York Jets.
Went 8-3 before getting hurt.
And then also has that 2009 season for the Vikings where he goes all the way to the NFC Championship game. They're playing in a dome every single week. So by virtue of not playing in frigid temperatures, I think that really helped and extended Brett Favre's career. It wasn't like he was bad at football suddenly. It wasn't like suddenly he fell off the cliff. But on that day, NFC Championship game, icicles coming down off of people's beards in the stands at Lambeau, that cold absolutely affected an older Brett Favre.
And if you remember, say what you want to say about Eli Manning in his career, he was a lot younger then. He was much younger than Brett Favre. And Eli Manning was completing passes all over the yard to Plaxico Burress that day. And that was, you know, evident when everybody watched the game going, wow, Eli Manning's not affected by this cold at all. Eli Manning was a lot younger than Brett Favre. Cold is going to affect an older quarterback, and I don't know how it doesn't affect Tom Brady Sunday.
If Justin Houston or Dee Ford burst through the line and smashes Tom Brady early in this game, and it's 16 degrees and freezing cold, and he lands on his shoulder or whatever, I got to feel like that affects Tom Brady more than it affects Patrick Mahomes. I got to feel like you will see an effect of Brady there. Again, they might completely rely on the ground, and they might try to do that to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands and out of the offense that's really explosive for the Chiefs, and that might just be the game plan. But if Brady has to throw, I mean, I think the real key is that if the Chiefs get up in this game, it's going to be really hard for the Patriots to catch up because I don't think they're built for the quick strikes. They don't have the big passing game right now, and I don't think it's 16 degrees and whatever it is, 2-degree wind chill, you're going to want Tom Brady out there having to take hits. I don't think you want the Chiefs being able to tee off, which is what they were able to do against Andrew Luck. The Colts desperately tried to run the football so that they could keep Luck out of obvious passing situations, and they couldn't. And once they got into that situation, the Chiefs' defensive line teed off. I think the same thing here. And remember, we called the Colts the best offensive line probably in football this year. Once it became obvious and evident they had to throw, the Chiefs were able to break through. Same thing with the Patriots. It's going to be really important for them not to fall behind by 14 points and force Brady into obvious throwing situations. Because I tend to agree, I don't think he's going to respond well if they're hitting him on a day where it's 15 degrees out. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. When we come back, one of the great hypotheticals, perhaps, in basketball history. Did the Milwaukee Bucks ruin the NBA? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
Oh, wow, he's coughing. Oh, now there's spit. There's spit right on his chin, dripping down. Oh, that's a gag.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The sounds and the sights of huge freeze that will never, ever, ever go away here on the DA Show. So gross. Everything about that is so gross. Remember, the DA Show is available on your phone by listening to CBS Sports app, radio.com app, or Apple Music, or watch it on any device. Watch the simulcast at watchda.com. Welterweight superstars return to the ring. 8-time champion, legendary Manny Pacquiao an explosive fight, a four-time champ. Saturday, this Saturday, January the 19th, on 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view and Showtime's pay-per-view. So, what an interesting hypothetical here. We know the dominance, we know the dynasty, we know the brilliance of the Golden State Warriors. But what if I told you the most important piece of the dynasty was almost a Milwaukee Buck? One of the Bucks owners, Buck owner Mark Lazary, has opened up about what happened with a potential Steph Curry to the Bucks trade during the 2011-2012 season. He told The Athletic that both teams were in conversations to trade Steph Curry to Milwaukee for Andrew Bogut. The Warriors ultimately traded Monta Ellis to Milwaukee for Andrew Bogut and Steven Jackson. Lazary says, I don't know if the Warriors could be, quote, light years ahead of everybody else if they were willing to trade Steph Curry to us for Andrew Bogut. That was the deal. But the Bucks medical staff didn't think Steph's ankle would hold up. They killed the deal. So I don't know if that's being light years ahead. It's luck, and that's fine. Now, Lazary talks about this because this is before he bought the team. He added, I think we got rid of that entire medical staff when we ended up buying the team.
I don't even have a job, Damian.
You think? Former Warriors GM Larry Riley also echoed Lazary's statements a year and a half ago, saying that Curry's name definitely did come up in a deal for the Milwaukee Bucks. But Riley said the only way we could get the trade started was to let them start talking about getting Curry. It was like going fishing. You throw some bait out there. A couple of things happened with that. I wanted to switch the deal over to Monta Ellis all along, but in order to get a conversation going, we had to do that. What is amazing is that, yes, there was a time whether the trade was ever going to be realized or not. There was a time where it was very sketchy in a lot of NBA circles about whether Steph Curry's ankle would ever hold up. And the Warriors can act as though they're light years ahead of everybody now, but at the time they also gave Steph Curry a cheaper contract because of questions about his ankle. So they had questions about Steph Curry's ankles as well. Obviously, 6 years later, 7 years later, it looks completely idiotic to have ever questioned Steph Curry's ankles because he has become one of the greatest shooters, the greatest shooter in NBA history, one of the greatest players of the modern era, a surefire Hall of Famer, and the fulcrum to a dynasty. But here's the thing. Let's ask a couple of questions here. Number one, if this deal went through, could you imagine if the Milwaukee Bucks ended up with Steph Curry and Giannis? Could you imagine the combination of having the Greek Freak and Steph Curry on the same team? Who knows, butterfly effect, if they trade for Steph, maybe they're not in the same draft position to get Giannis. But could you imagine a combination of Steph and Giannis in the NBA? How absolutely unstoppable that would be. Yeah, okay, so try to defend Giannis Antetokounmpo. Oh, you can't? Oh, that's too bad because you're also not able to stop Steph Curry from outside. Oh, there's a guy bombing from 29 feet, and there's a 7-footer that's running like a point guard, smashing on your face, turning around and hitting jumpers, swatting everything in sight and running like a gazelle. Cool, who are you going to pick there to double-team? Who are you excited about double-teaming there? So the greatest what-if ever is, what if Steph Curry goes to Milwaukee and they've got Antetokounmpo and him? And also, what if he is not on Golden State? What happens if the Warriors don't have Steph? I think that Steph Curry has benefited greatly from having other shooters around him. I think by virtue of having Klay Thompson, it has helped him out. I think also the coaching has really helped him out. Mark Jackson and Steph Curry, Steph was not an MVP. Steve Kerr and Steph Curry, Steph Curry's an MVP. So I think wherever he went, I mean, look, if Jason Kidd was his head coach in Milwaukee, suddenly I don't believe that Steph is the dynamic superstar that he is right now. Probably would have been really good, but not what we're seeing. It took Kerr to really let him loose. And I think it took that team and that time to really get the most out of him. So I don't think Steph has the career that he's having unless he goes to Golden State. And I also don't think that the Warriors are anywhere close, that being said, to being a dynasty without Steph. Well, Klay Thompson's obviously really great. Draymond has been great. The pieces that they've surrounded them with, Seth Livingston and Andre Iguodala and all the pieces that they had there, have been great. But if you take Steph off of that team in their first title run, they're not winning the NBA Finals. They're not beating LeBron. I don't think they're even getting all the way to the NBA Finals without Steph. And right now, Kevin Durant joined the Warriors because they were already on the doorstep of winning a championship. I know that Draymond ended up selling him on it, but Steph is the guy that I think KD was excited about playing next to. I don't think Kevin Durant goes to Golden State. If that trade goes through, no matter what Steph's career ended up being in Milwaukee, the Warriors are just simply not a dynasty. There's no way, shape, or form. There's no way. Because Monte Ellis was not a guy that you're going to build around as a dynasty. There's no way. It's one of the greatest what-ifs in NBA history. And if Mark Lazary is telling the truth that the only reason the deal didn't go through is because the medical team nixed it, that's crazy. Could you imagine being the doctor on the medical staff that nixed a trade for Steph and said, no, his ankles will never hold up? And 7 years later, looking at him drop threes from the tunnel? And so I asked, did this botched trade, the Milwaukee Bucks, ruin the NBA? Because if Steph doesn't stay in Golden State, they're not a dynasty. It's far more wide open. Now, maybe LeBron ends up winning all four of those championships. Maybe. But I don't think so. I think there would have been another team that stepped up in that void and got to an NBA Finals and at least knocked off the Cavaliers once or twice in that run. But if you're watching at watchda.com right now, the inevitable Andrew Kaplan has Steph in a Milwaukee Bucks uniform. And it looks pretty cool. And it looks like an NBA that I would really enjoy watching. Watch at watchda.com. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227 on Twitter. DA on CBS. Peter tweets, Kansas City weather, real freeze versus big freeze in KC. Hashtag bring Robbie back. Hashtag fat kids stay warm in the freeze. Senor Pantleg tweets, DA, every time you talk about Adam Gase, I get that Kim Carnes, Betty Davis eye song stuck in my head all day. I'm glad you brought that up because a colleague of ours here in CBS Radio put together a little nice mock song that I want to play some point during this show. He's got Adam Gase's eyes. Reed Phillips tweets, basically Mraz just admitted that the media in New York are all egotistical and judgmental jerks. The rest of us peasants, not in New York City, have guessed it forever, but now we know for certain. Look, I don't want Mraz to represent any of us, okay? Do not let him represent the media in general, New Yorkers, New York City, or anything. Mraz is Mraz. And when he says Adam Gase is already done because he's got crazy eyes, Mraz is cuckoo. Okay? Were the crazy eyes scary? Yes, they were scary. Was I scared by them? Yes, I was scared. But am I automatically saying he's toast because of his crazy eyes? Absolutely not. And I'm not sitting here saying he can't survive the New York media because of crazy eyes. Look, crazy eyes might help him here. Helps him perhaps see a question coming out of the left side of the press conference when usually a coach would be focused on the right side. If he can perhaps prepare better because suddenly a guy for the New York Post on the left side, usually he's focused on the right side, and then the eye goes that way and he sees the question coming. Perhaps even, you know, he can do two interviews at once. He's being interviewed by the Post and then also the Daily News. One eye's this side, one eye's that side. Perhaps it, I think it could be a benefit, to be quite frank. She got Betty Davis eyes. And he's scary, and you don't know who he's looking at. Is it a taco or a mosquito? He's just looking all over that room. Adam Gase's eyes. He's got Adam Gase's eyes. Run it on third and long. Can't get out of his own way. She got Betty Davis eyes. She'll take a tumble on you. Matt Mora Tannehill. Roll you like you were dice. Losing to the Pats again. Until you come out blue. Low, low, low. Adam Gase's eyes. Belichick will expose you. She's ferocious. And precocious. Takes to run an offense into the ground. Look out. Everyone knows he's got Adam Gase's eyes. Ba-dum. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. Chiefs nose tackle. Derek Nnadi ahead of the AFC Championship game next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Good value, big upside. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back to CBS Sports Radio, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. DA with you as always. You can listen to us across the CBS Sports Radio Network and then also on SiriusXM Channel 206. AFC Championship game coming up on Sunday. Patriots and Chiefs from a frigid Arrowhead Stadium. And one guy that's not going to worry about that weather is our next guest. He has been the standout rookie of this Chiefs recent draft class. He's become the starting nose tackle out of Florida State. Derek Nnadi joining us here on the show. Derek, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you joining us. And like I said, you won't mind this because I saw you before last weekend's game against the Colts doing snow angels. So you were feeling right at home, huh?
Oh, of course. I was born and raised in Virginia, so I'm used to the snow.
So you went outside, and while everybody else is worried about the snow falling down and the cold conditions, you said, I'm going to embrace it. Good for you.
Thank you. So, I, with me, it's just like I haven't seen snow in such a long time. I figured it was my only opportunity to really do it. So I was like, if I got to go out there, I got to get me a snow angel, at least one or two.
You got it in, and you guys obviously played really well. You know, obviously, your offense is what so many people talk about, but defensively, you guys were phenomenal on Saturday against the Colts. In terms of a team-wide performance out of the defense, did that impress even yourself?
No, I felt like I believe that this type of team we could be all year. And a lot of times it's just certain things happening in a game. No game's really perfect. And these type of games that everyone really clicked. We played ball to the wall, playing back-to-back, playing Chiefs football.
You know, everybody was talking about Andrew Luck of the offense of the Indianapolis Colts, and this was going to be a shootout. As a defense, did you take that personally, that everybody assumed that the Colts would be able to score on you?
I see it. Everyone has the right to have their own opinions, but at the end of the day, it all goes to when you get in the game. So I wasn't really bothered by everybody's opinions.
Chiefs nose tackle Derek Nnadi joins us here on the show. You know, I find it really interesting that you guys play so gosh darn well at Arrowhead Stadium, and of course you'll get the AFC title game there again coming up on Sunday. Is there any way to really put into words why it is that the Chiefs defense plays so well at home?
It's really the atmosphere from just us being at home, having the fans there supporting us through it all. It just gives us a little more of a chip on our shoulder to play that much harder.
I got to tell you, when I saw videos of the gates not even open at Arrowhead Stadium and fans lined up in the snow in their cars waiting to come into the gate just so that they can tailgate for 4 or 5 hours before they even go into the game, as the snow is coming down, I said, man, Chiefs fans are just the best. And I lived in Kansas City for 5 years, so I know it well. Aren't Chiefs fans just amazing? That must have been really cool for you guys to see that early in the day, fans ready to go.
Absolutely. I got drafted, everybody was telling me how the fans were. Like, they'll be tailgating 4 or 5 hours before a game just to be around it. I heard about that. I'm like, that is absolutely amazing to have some type of a fan base on our side. And I really give them credit for sticking with this organization for so long, even though from what I've heard from former players and current players, this team's had ups and downs in this couple of years. And this being this being a really great year, sticking with us through all in all, and just my hat's off to them.
You know, you are one of the rare guys that can do the tomahawk chop and hear it in college at FSU, and then also at Arrowhead Stadium. Must take you back to Tallahassee when you hear them doing the tomahawk chop.
Oh, no doubt. It feels like I'm right back in college. Like, it's the first home game. It just kind of blew me by. I'm like, wow, I'm really back in college. It's like the atmosphere is almost the exact same way. The second I heard it, I got filled with so much energy. It was just like I was right back in college.
That's awesome. You took over as the starter at nose tackle pretty early in the season. Were you starting when you guys ended up playing the Patriots earlier in the year?
I believe so.
So you were on the field, obviously, for a number of those Patriots plays and against that Patriots offense. You had a number of tackles in that game. In terms of preparation for what you guys faced during the regular season, does it differ at all because now it's the playoffs, or is it the same type of week of preparation going up against New England?
I mean, being the playoffs, you obviously have to up your A game because you're going against not just good players, but great and elite players. And this type of situation, it's really win or go home. So they'll bring out as many things out of the woodwork just to come out with a win as well as we are. So you really got to prepare a lot more. You got to be more detailed and more in your preparation than how it was in the regular season.
Is there an element to the Chiefs defense that's, I told you so? You know, there are so many people that say the Chiefs defense is the Achilles heel of this team, that you guys go out there and just stomp on the Colts last week. Is there, I could kind of tell it in your voice, do you guys use that as a told you so chip on your shoulder?
Somewhat, but at the same time, we just handle our business, honestly. We'll try not to worry about all the outside noise. We worry about what's inside the house and just deal with things that are inside the house and just keep working on them.
When you watch Tom Brady on film, and you've obviously played against him on the field, we know how great he has been over the course of his career. What is it like to defend against him, and what separates him from other quarterbacks you face?
With Tom Brady, man, what can I tell you about? Well, with starters, I have absolute respect for him. And he's been in the game for so long. He reads, studies pretty much everything that's been going on in every game, and he'll make every single check against everything. So with him, you got to be on your P's and Q's 100%. Because with him, the second he sees something that's a little off, he's going to read it, and he's going to change up a play just to make sure he beats that and just make it look kind of ridiculous.
Derek Nnadi joins us, Chiefs rookie nose tackle here on the DA show on CBS Sports Radio. There was a really important play I felt in the game against the Colts on Saturday for you guys. There was the turnover where your offense, Sammy Watkins, had fumbled the ball. It put you guys in a tough spot defensively. Even though you had the lead, the Colts took over possession right about the 20-yard line. And on 2nd and 10, they could have gone into the red zone and scored a touchdown and maybe flip the momentum. And you guys got the sack, forced the fumble, and got the recovery. Was that a moment as a defense that you felt was kind of a defining moment, not only in the game, but also for your unit?
I wouldn't call it a defining moment. I just seen it as us pretty much being a firefighter in a sense. And that, in the sudden change, I always see it as like, oh, a fire's been struck, we got put out the fire. And I feel like we really did that really, really well.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, because I think everybody said, uh-oh, here we go, the momentum could change. Then it was the defense, in your case, that really flipped the script. When you walk out into that stadium and the snow is falling down and the crowd is going crazy and you know that it's a playoff game, that was the first time you got to experience that last week. What type of energy, what type of juice did you get being in that environment?
Really, I try to treat every game the same. So I just coming in, I came in saying, yo, this is a game we got to win, because the next game, I got your back, you got my back. So whatever happens, we still a team. And so when things start rolling, I'm hyped up, jumping, going crazy, as well as all my other teammates. And if something goes off, we still sticking in the game, still in tune, still in game mode, ready to go back and handle anything we got to deal with. So if anything, I was just more focused.
Chiefs defensive tackle Derek Nnadi joining us here on the show. Chiefs and Patriots AFC title game coming up here on Sunday, and you just know that this game is going to be incredible, and the sights and the sounds and the experience is going to be incredible as well. Bundle up, Derek. I know that you were excited about the snow last week, but it sounds like it's going to be frigid temperature, so bundle up. I'm sure you guys will have a hell of a crowd behind you coming up on Sunday. That's going to be exciting.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. Congratulations for getting to the AFC title game, man. Good luck on Sunday, buddy.
Thank you.
Chiefs nose tackle rookie Derek Nnadi joining us this morning on the show in advance of the AFC title game coming up on Sunday. It's the late game. NFC game is the early game. Patriots and Chiefs, the late game. Appreciate him dropping on by. You can always hit us up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Here's an interesting stat. Andy Reid has lost to Bill Belichick in a Super Bowl. He also lost to Bill Belichick in the playoffs a couple of years ago in Foxborough when he was with the Chiefs. But Andy Reid recently has played the Patriots maybe as well as anybody has played against the Patriots, at least offensively. All time, Bill Belichick has given up 40 points or more 7 times. All time, only given up 40 points or more 7 times. 3 of those against Andy Reid. Again, Belichick has the ultimate hang-over-your-head stat. I beat you in the Super Bowl when Andy Reid was with Philadelphia. But recently, the Chiefs have found ways to beat the Patriots or at least put up a lot of points. Earlier this year, the Patriots won in the shootout, a game played in the 40s. 2 years ago, opening day in Foxborough, opening night, the Chiefs went up there and won, did something that really nobody does in the Belichick-Brady era, which is come back from a deficit in the fourth quarter and create big plays against that defense in the fourth quarter to do so. So here's my question, Mraz. Is it possible Andy Reid has had less wins and loss success in Kansas City? Remember, he went to 5 NFC championship games in Philadelphia. 5. Went to a Super Bowl as well. Is it possible he's had less wins in the playoffs and less wins overall in KC, but he's actually a better coach? Is that possible?
I think it's possible, because I think in anything, Bill Belichick's a better coach, obviously, than he was at Cleveland. I think you learn from your past mistakes in year one, despite the success he had. Number two, you could argue before this year, Mahomes, he's done more with less when you consider he's had Alex Smith as his quarterback with his deficiencies. And Donovan McNabb was a pretty damn good quarterback in Philadelphia. So, yeah, I think it's very possible he's a better coach in Kansas City.
I think Reed's offense is better. I think he's much better offensively, much more sophisticated offensively, and we're really seeing this year what he can do with a great quarterback in Mahomes. But he even did a lot of great things offensively with Alex Smith. The issue is he didn't have one and dones and early exits in Philadelphia so much. They were usually a problem. And yes, they lost a lot of NFC title games. And there was the idea that he couldn't get over the hump in Philadelphia. They lost three straight NFC championship games. Two of those at home. Finally got to a Super Bowl and lost there. Lost another NFC title game. So he lost four of the five. He hasn't even gotten, before this year, to an AFC title game. But I think his offense is more sophisticated. I think in that way he's a better coach. So what's really interesting is that if there is a matchup in the playoffs that might be bad for a Bill Belichick team, ironically, it's an Andy Reid team. Now, again, Reid is known for early exits. The Chiefs are known for early exits. Reid is kind of seen as the guy that can't get it done. Belichick's always gotten it done. But in terms of head-to-head recently, the Chiefs have played the Patriots on offense as well as anybody has. And that's not only with Mahomes, but also with Alex Smith. Reid's offense is the one offense that consistently gives the Patriots problems. On a freezing cold day, on a frozen turf, I don't know if it can be as explosive. But in terms of head-to-head, Reid has had the number recently of scoring lots of points on Belichick. When we come back here on the DA Show, we'll talk about Tom Brady's comments last week that struck a nerve with some of his former teammates in a bad way. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.